Welcome to Merkaba Chakras, where we talk Buddhism in the fifth dimension. A Buddha is someone who's awake within the matrix and co-creating with divinity as a soul having a human experience. Each enlightened episode is dedicated to help you level up the energy field of your Merkaba. You can manifest the parallel reality that fits the best version of you. This podcast is for entertainment purposes and does not necessarily reflect the views of the host or replace any medical or legal advice. Now, let's welcome your host, author Vaughn Galt, and her guest.
Welcome to another podcast episode of Merkaba Chakras. Today, we dive into the fascinating world of hypnosis with introspective hypnosis instructor and author Antonio Sangio. Now, Antonio was born in Lima, Peru, and raised in the United States. His fascination for using various hypnosis techniques to help people led him to meeting the founder of introspective hypnosis, Mr. Aurelio Meja, a Colombian hypnotherapist. What makes this type of hypnosis unique is that it was created to address a client's perceived concept of demonic and negative possession or attachments. So we're going to go into that in much, much detail. But today, like I said, we're going to go deep into the transformative world of releasing negative entities and perceived attachments to bring all parties back into the healing embrace of the ever-loving light. So with that, Antonio, welcome to Merkaba Chakras.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Vaughn. Thank you for having me. It is a pleasure for me to be here. And I like the topic. I like the title you chose for today's video. And we're using the name, the word negative, which is what people think, even though it is not part of our belief system when we work with our clients. That's what they perceive. That's what they come to us thinking, that there's something negative attached to them. So thank you again for allowing me to share what we're going to share today.
Yeah, I do hypnosis. I've been doing NLP, hypnosis, meditation, mm-hmm. my whole life through various studies in different schools of Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And hypnosis is our understanding of the modern name for a practice that's been going all the way back to shamanic days and even beyond that. So, and even the modern science, I'm actually putting this in my second book, Buddhist Mandalas, Christ Consciousness of a Multidimensional Merkaba. So just for you guys out there who keep on bugging me, I'm working on it. So, but I'm actually putting in there because meditation is hypnosis and hypnosis is meditation. But before we get into more of that, let's tell the audience your story for how you even got into this work in the first place.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's a long story. I'll try to make it short. So first of all, I believe that we all come with a purpose, right? And everything that happens to us is for a reason. And all of those things that we're going to experience in life are going to lead us to our purpose if we know how to embrace those experiences. So I always felt the need of helping people, sharing knowledge. And I learned different things. I even at some point learned to read the Egyptian tarot, the cards, in order to help people. But when I noticed the type of questions that people were asking, I wanted to use that as therapy. And they wanted to know about the future. I was not resonating with that. I said, no, this is not what I want. When my mother-in-law passed, actually, let me back up. My father used to read metaphysical books. And through him, I was listening what he was saying, all the comments he was making about the books. One of those books was Many Lives, Many Masters by Brian Weiss. It's a must-read book, really interesting. And I was, I don't know, early 20s back then, or maybe 19 or 20. years old. And when he mentioned the word reincarnation, to me, it makes sense. I had not heard that before. I was raised Catholic. My mother is very Catholic. My father passed away already. My mother is very Catholic, and I was raised in a Catholic school. So, but anyway, the word reincarnation resonated with me, and it made sense. Back then, I didn't like reading books, so I didn't read that book. But later in life, when my mother-in-law passed away and my wife brought some of her books home, that book was there again, Many Lives, Many Masters. And it looked brand new. I don't know if my mother-in-law got to read it, or maybe the universe made her bought it because it needed to land in my hands, right? So I read that book again and said, wow, this is what I want to learn. So I started researching online. The first person I found was Aurelio Mejia. My was actually my second teacher, but he's the first person I found. And I was watching his videos, but back then he was not teaching. He was not coming to the US, and my cousin told me, no, there is a lady called Dolores Cannon. She has this website, she teaches past life regression. So I registered with her. I studied the level 1 and 2. In level 2, I learned with Alba Wyman. I met Alba Wyman, my friend and colleague. We do a lot of things together, even teaching classes. So that is how I started with hypnosis, because of that book. And everything unfolded from there. Everything else unfolded. I started trying to get more tools. I felt like, okay, I learned quantum healing hypnosis technique, and it's great. I'm really grateful to Dolores. But I felt like in my sessions, there were other things that were presenting themselves that I didn't have tools for. That is when I finally was able to train with Aurelio Mejia.
Now, really quick, what were some of the things that you didn't feel that you were, that you needed more tools for, that were coming up for you? Because different hypnosis practitioners will attract to them certain types. So yeah. What was it that you were getting that you needed more tools for?
Well, so let's talk about then QHST. But even some people might disagree with me. QHST is basically past life regression. It is contacting the higher self. It's when the people bring questions, you ask questions to the higher self. Dolores Cannon used to call it the subconscious mind. It is not the subconscious mind as psychology sees it. It is the part of you connected to the spirit world. So that is what we learned. And she was great. It's a great method. The problem was that some people were not going to past lives. They stayed in this life. They were going to issues in this life. What do I do now? Because that technique was around past lives. And another thing that made me look for more tools is the induction. In QHHT, you use one induction, which is mostly visual, and not everybody is visual. And you don't need to be visual in order to be hypnotized. So that turned on a spark on me and said, I need to learn more. I need to find more techniques. And with Aurelio, I learned other tools because the name of the technique in Spanish is hypnosis introspectiva. It focuses on symptoms, on things on this life, psychosomatic symptoms, phobia, sadness, fears, whatever issues. And as you're working with your clients, they might end up, as you're looking for the root cause of whatever issue, they might end up in a past life, but it's not based on past life regression. So there are certain tools that you need to learn in order to help people through traumas, fears, phobias. And I felt I needed more at that time.
Right. And so then you were looking for another tool to help round off your practice. So yeah, what did you find next?
Well, a friend of mine named Genoveva Calleja, who also is a QHST practitioner, who also trained with Aurelio, who became friends. I invited her to my house when Aurelio, because I was able to host Aurelio for 2 years in a row for 6 days, right? That's how I learned. I invited Genoveva. We both learned from him. So Genoveva said, Antonio, I am taking the Life Between Lives class with the Michael Newton Institute. I was not familiar with Michael Newton. I was not familiar with the technique. I watched videos, I read the book, and I recommend it for my classes, for introspective hypnosis classes, because he has a really great explanation about the spirit world. So she said, this is the next level, you should do it. So I follow her advice, and she was right. So I learned life between lives, and life between lives is basically everything that takes place in between lives. It's not therapy. We're not going to deal with sad events. We're not going to deal with traumas or phobias. We're going to use a past life as an entry point to the spirit world. But it is then when you as a soul, you learn about your eternal identity, you learn about your guides, your soul groups, and the dynamic of the soul groups. You might go to the resting place. So selection of the body, you might go to the library, all these places in the spirit world. So I got that knowledge and I said, okay, I'm okay, I got it, right? So I had, back then, I had three techniques and I felt like I had enough to manage or to facilitate sessions. If anybody went to a past life, the knowledge of QHC. If anybody needed things with fear, phobia, sadness, issues from this life, hypnosis introspectiva, or what I call it now, introspective hypnosis, because I made changes to it and added more things. And then if somebody goes after their body dies in a past life and they go to spirit world, then I have the knowledge of LBL in order to navigate that session. And I thought it was going to stop there until a colleague who is a psychologist in Mexico said, you know what, Antonio, there's this guy named Jose Luis Cabuli. He practices a technique called TVP. In Spanish, it's Terapia de Vidas Pasadas, which is past life therapy, it's a translation. And he's gonna do a workshop here in Mexico. Why don't we go there? And I said, okay, I went there and I was amazed on what I saw, because he was not using inductions and people were going into a trance and they were having profound experiences. And he was helping them release those traumas, because his technique is based on soul entrapment, soul fragmentation, understanding that the soul doesn't understand time, that everything is happening now, that part of our energy is trapped in experiences, in what we call past lives, even though everything is happening now and that's what we feel the symptom now. So his point of view is that we need to help our clients make conscious what is unconscious to them, because they already have the symptom. Mm-hmm. If you already have the symptom, you don't need to travel in time and space. There's no regression. You already have it. Whatever you think is the past, you have it with you. We just need to help our clients make that available. So I learned that technique from him. And oh my God. So now I have a lot of tools. And then I have, as I said, I have the tools to manage this, the map of the soul, past life, present life, in between lives, and soul entrapment and fragmentation.
Yeah. I recognize the concept behind soul entrapment fragmentation, like you said, by Dr. Jose Luis Cabuli. Mm-hmm. In that he's saying that we already experience the symptoms now, regardless of which point in past, present time, whatever, different lifetimes, yes, future, yes, etc. We are, all of our souls, all of our experiences are connected and happening at the same time. So we are experiencing, yes, that. That's very right. Fifth dimension. That's a very fifth dimensional way
it's
of
quantum
seeing.
Time.
Yeah, yes. It's quantum, yes, time. It's a very higher dimensional awareness. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask a little bit more about that. But all of this brought you to your book that you recently published, which is My Soul's Purpose. So yes. In doing all this work, what is the purpose of your soul?
I need to refer to my book, by the way. Well, you have it on the screen, but this is my book. My Soul Purpose is right here, and this is the back. And
there's also a Spanish version as well.
El Propósito de Mi Alma is in Spanish, and it's being translated to French now. Somebody that took the class, you know, I don't consider them my students, my friends and colleagues. She volunteered to translate it to French. It's being translated to French now.
Wow, that's amazing.
So I wanted to transmit a message. So I didn't want to make it about my life only, because it's not that interesting, you know, and that's ego anyway. So I said, okay, let me share a little bit of my path and how I got to hypnosis. At the same time, I'm sharing concepts of spirituality. I am sharing cases to back up the information and the concepts I'm providing. What else? Basically, I want to motivate people that is in this path, or whatever path, or people that are in the victim role, to snap out of that victim role, because it's not going to take you anywhere. I tell in my book my experience with my father and through my father, and how I was able to close the cycle with him by the time he passed away recently this year, in June this year. So it's kind of a retrospection, understanding that now that I understand my purpose is, number one, sharing the knowledge, share people to help incarnated and disincarnated souls, because we're also helping lost souls. People call them negative energies. They are not negative energies. They are lost souls, and they need help. We are part of the team that is, because they don't see the light. That's the thing. They don't see the light. So their guides and light beings, they cannot help because they don't see the light. So we're doing it from here, from down here, from the third dimension. We help them see the light. And once they see the light, you have the other part of the team working on the spirit world that take over and keep helping them. So to me, that's my purpose, helping souls, helping incarnated souls, my clients, and helping disembodied souls, attachments, or some spirits that manifest during the sessions. That is what I consider my purpose.
Right, right. So you don't really just stop at the physical body of your client. You also talk to and try to help the soul that is non-physical.
Right.
That may be hanging around like somebody's deceased loved one that just hasn't gone crossed over and is kind of hanging around for some reason.
Yeah. So think about it. We are a spirit having a human experience, right? Mm-hmm. So this body is temporary, but the soul never dies. For the soul, life is only one with experiences in different bodies. Mm-hmm. So this soul remembers whatever happened in previous bodies, the traumas, the soul entrapment or whatever, and we bring it to this one. That's what we're feeling all this now. So in my sessions, I don't focus on the mind. That is the difference with introspective hypnosis, at least the way I practice it. I focus on the soul because the soul has all the answers, because the soul knows where everything started, you know? And the same thing as lost souls, since they didn't go to the light, they keep the same personality, they keep the same belief system. Some of them might not go thinking that they will be sent to hell, that they're going to be punished, because they are still in this physical plane, even though they don't have a body. Mm-hmm.
Do they know that they're dead?
Sometimes they don't. I'm the one that has to give the news to them.
Oh, and what happens when you find they find out through you, through the session, that they're not alive anymore? What typically happens?
First, we're going to argue with you. I'm not dead. I'm talking to you. Yes. Oh. I'm sure your soul never dies. You're talking to me. But when was the last time you have a body? Go to that moment. And let's say it's a man. Okay. And you're talking to me through my client who is a woman. You understand that this is a body that doesn't belong to you. And at that time it's like, so what do I do now? Right? So we need to help them depending on the type of death they had. Mm. Sometimes they are not aware. Based on the way they die, they also blame themselves. They also entrap themselves and not going to the light because
they don't think they're worthy. Guilty,
or because they have enemies and they want to look revenge. Or they are still attached to material things or the house or the money, right? They want to take care of the wife, or they want to wait for the wife to cross over, or the husband, or they want to take care of the kids. So for many, many reasons, some of them decide not going to the light. Some of them are not aware that their body died. Some are just really want to cause problems. If you had an issue with them in this life or a previous life, they will look for you and cause issues.
Well, now question with these disembodied spirits that, you know, these souls that don't have a body anymore. Mm-hmm. When you're talking to them, do they have recall of their previous lives, or they're just recalling the current past, the one that they just, you know, lived through? Do they get instant recall of everything else?
Well, not immediately. Some do, but most of the time they are confused. And most of the time they have some kind of amnesia. This is what I was understanding from my sessions, because I was asking them questions. So when you had a body, were you a man or a woman? I don't remember. I'm going to count from 5 to 1. I want you to go to the last moment you had a body and tell me what is happening. And they start telling me about what is happening, basically their death or agony. It is then that they remember they were a man, they were a woman. I didn't know what was the cause of this, but then I found it in the books of the spirits written by Allan Kardec. If you search about, there's certain things about possession and talks about spirits. It tells you that once the spirit leaves, depending on how they died and their evolution, some of them get confused and they stay in that state for some time. So some of them, this is the ones that attach to clients for many reasons, and they manifest themselves when they're in a session. Why? Because the client is in a trance. When a client is in a trance, they are kind of in the body, but at the same time, they have access to a more subtle dimension.
Right.
And they get to see and feel more.
Right. Now, question for you about these. When you come across these in your hypnosis sessions through the client, I mean, obviously the client has come to you because they feel like there's something wrong with, there's like another entity, or there's something wrong, or something that brings them over to thinking that they have some kind of attachment or some kind of haunting energy around them. And you come across these. Why did they not go to the light when they die? Did they not see it? Oh. I mean, why is it not consistent?
Okay, well, so let's see. First of all, those people that come to me saying, I think I have an attachment, most of the time they don't have any.
And why is that?
They have been told by a psychic. Oh, I've been told by a psychic that I have such and such attachment. Or I've been to this place and I've been told this. And we didn't find anything during the session. Yeah. You know, and sometimes they get upset. You don't know what you're doing. I was told that. So yeah, I'm not doing it. You are in a trance and you're supposed to feel it. You're supposed to experience whatever you think you're experiencing. So
do you think that people like that who for whatever reason, whether they come to their conclusion that they have a quote unquote attachment, or they heard it through a psychic or whoever, do they kind of like, it's kind of like those people who think they're going to be in a car accident. And so they kind of manifest it. They keep thinking and thinking, and then it happens.
Well,
do they think themselves into thinking that this is happening? And so then,
everything is suggestions, right? Your mind can make you sick. Your mind can heal you. So if I'm telling you, if you come to me and I'm psychic, and I tell you, well, yes, you have one spirit here, and this spirit knows you from this life, and this is doing this to you, as you leave my office, what are you going to feel? You're going to be paranoid. Everything that happens to you, you're going to blame it on the attachment, right?
Right.
So I find it very irresponsible when a psychic tells this to a person and they let the person leave their office without even dealing with attachment. If you're so good to see attachments, why don't you help the attachment attach
right.
to your client?
Why is that? Why is right? that? Because I have come across some of those clients as well. And then we address it. But this is a common thing that I have heard, that, you know, they go to a $10 psychic or a $40 medium or whatever, you know, just for entertainment. And then they get this. And then, like, why is this a marketing thing? Well, we're going to drop this and then you're going to keep coming back for more sessions. I mean, what is the strategy behind dropping something negative and then letting them leave with that thought? Like, you actually cause harm by letting them believe and leave with something negative.
Exactly.
Even if it's not physical.
They don't deal with it. They tell you you have it. You might not. They tell you you have it. And let's say that you're real psychic and you see somebody, the spirit attached, then do something about it. Don't let your client go out thinking that, because that client is going to go into a search looking for people to get rid of that attachment for them. And it's sad when that happens. So those that come to me saying, I've been told I have an attachment, forget it. Most of the time, there's nothing. Yeah. The attachments I find is because people come feeling symptoms. They don't understand what the symptoms are coming from. Maybe they went to the doctor and the doctor told them, you're totally fine. You're not supposed to be feeling this. Or like somebody I had that called me one day, she found me on doing a Google search. I need to come to see you. I feel like I'm choking. I'm afraid my husband is gonna find me dead one day with my kid here. I cannot breathe. So when she came for a session, And we started working on the session. We started working on sad memories. She went to a memory when she was a young girl. This woman was in her 40s already. She went to a time where she was a teenager, selling, I think, tacos or something on the street with her mom. And she started choking while in a trance. She started doing this, right? Mm-hmm. She said, "I'm choking." I said, "Here or there?" "There." "Okay. And does this normally happen to you when I eat, when you're there?" "Yes." "Okay." So we started following that symptom, and she went into what was supposed to be a past life. I started navigating it as it was a past life. But at the end, I noticed that after leaving the body, the spirit didn't go to the light. And then I remember that the first scene of that past life, she was telling me, "I see people running, I see smoke, I see horses running, but they don't see me." Right? She was already, she got to the moment where she was already out of the body, but I took her back. And right. We found the story. So it wasn't, so the symptom of not being able to breathe was not from her, was from this woman that died suffocated in a fire, in a town, right. Where a town burned.
Right. And this woman somehow attached to this, your client?
Right. And my client started feeling what she was feeling, feeling afraid, feeling she was going to die, feeling she's not able to breathe. Mm-hmm. And but she came because she had the symptoms. She didn't come. I mean, she didn't come saying, "I think I have an attachment. I cannot breathe." So most of the time, they are not aware of this. They just come mm-hmm. because they are not feeling mm-hmm. well. Now, I've been contacted recently by a lady saying, "Antonio, I need to contact you. I think I have an attachment." And this started when I started using the Ouija board, doing experiments with a friend with a Ouija board in my house. So, okay, I replied saying, "Okay, what are the symptoms? What do you think? Why do you think it's an attachment?" Mm-hmm. And she gave me all the symptoms. Oh, okay, it makes sense. So she booked a session and was supposed to see that next week. But the reasons why spirits don't go to the light, number one, they want to stay with their loved ones. Or number two...
What if their loved ones passed on? Do they still stay? Because sometimes they all have gone... But they're still hanging around. For what reason?
They don't see the light. Once you decide to stay, you don't see the light.
It closes off.
That's the thing. Yeah. It closes off. That's the thing. So some don't realize their body died because of the way their body died. Drug overdose in an operating room under anesthesia, mm-hmm. right? You're alive one moment, dead on the next moment. When you wake up, you're already in another dimension. People don't see me. People cannot hear me. Right? Right. Or right. Let's say you were we're going to call a bad person and you raped a lot of people. Let's put sure. it that way. By the time you die, and as you realize what you have done, you say, "I don't deserve to be forgiven." Or I said, "I don't want to go up there because they're going to send me to hell, going to be punished." And they decide to stay. We have free will up there, down here, and
How long can they hang around? I mean, eons? Or does their soul group on the other side, because everybody's spirit guides and angels, whatever, if the light closes in on them and they decide not to go in after their death for whatever reason, it closes. Does that close everybody on the other side off to them?
Well, they just, that confusion does not allow them to see the light. It's not that the light really closes off, but mm-hmm. they don't see the light. Okay. But the soul doesn't understand time. So for us, it could be years and years and years. For them, it just happened.
Oh, yes, that's you true. See? That's true. Mm-hmm.
Right. I had a, when I started with QHST, I always tried to keep myself busy practicing. So I was inviting friends for sessions. And my friend went to what it was supposed to be a past life in the Wild West. But then we realized that it was a man that was killed. And he attached to him.
And why do they attach to certain people? I mean, there's a lot of people walking around. Why do they pick the people that they pick to attach to?
Maybe because they resonate with the issues they have. They resonate with their habits, their addictions.
Are they reading the aura field of the person?
Yeah, our aura has all that information.
It does. Right? It does.
And the color of the aura as well. So what is it that I wanted to say? I forgot what I was going to tell you.
It's I'm okay. Sorry. It'll come back to you. Well, let me ask you this. Yes. Well, it'll come back to you. Now, in Buddhism, since we're going right into discussing attachments and negative energy. In Buddhism, we know that there is no hell. And that there is no Satan, because one, in Buddhism, the concept of hell was a fabrication of the early Catholic, nothing against Catholic Church, but the early Catholic Church's misunderstandings of an out of control ego, like the angel and the devil on your shoulder. The mischievous devil is the concept of the ego that everybody has, and it's a child and it's naive and it needs to be trained. But early Catholicism, when they created and fabricated Yeshua's, or in the West you would call Jesus, Yeshua's story for their purposes, they came up with the concept of hell, and they just used common superstitions to create that. It is in our scrolls, it is in our philosophies. We have the full records of Isa or Yeshua and him and Miriam and all that. However, the concept of Satan is based off of an old Sumerian folklore about a reptile looking humanoid that gave Eve information. And you can look at old Sumerian records, and there is actually a character called Satan. So these are fabrications, but aside from that, so we know that it doesn't exist, but over time it has perpetuated and has become part of the understanding that so many religions and worldwide, and people are not aware that their consciousness creates their reality. Their consciousness creates the things in their lives, and what they focus on and believe in factors into how they create their lives. So a lot of people are creating their fears, and it's manifesting. And so even though it's not necessarily real. So what do you say to people who tell you that what you do is witchcraft and demon summoning?
What I do in my sessions, I lost friends because of that. I lost especially one that I consider a really good friend, because he says, you're practicing occultism. You're speaking to spirits. You know, your house feels different. My house didn't feel different. It's his idea of spirits and religion. So yeah, I was told that even my mom was concerned when I started practicing hypnosis. What are you getting yourself into? Now she understands. You see, so I tell them that there's no hell. There's no evil. I don't believe in evil. I don't believe in negative energies. There are souls more evolved than others. Okay. So there are souls that need help. They are not developed, and sometimes they will use special effects as I communicate with them, because they don't want to deal with whatever they have to deal.
So what kind of special effects do you typically see on these young souls who are like, I'm a negative entity, or I'm the devil, or I'm whatever. Yeah. So when you go into conversations with that character and you go way, way back, what's the original story?
Well, so first of all, they have information. They being out of the body, they have information. They might have information about us. Actually, our aura has a lot of information. Mm-hmm. As soon as they detect that we're afraid, they're going to start messing with us. I'm Satan. I'm going to change the voice. And don't react to it. I just keep talking to them like nothing happens. And then they realize, sometimes they start crying, and they realize they need help. And we take them back to the moment their body died to understand what happened to them. You know, why is it that in that the process of dying, in what moment is it that you didn't see the light, or you thought about something, or you said something, or your belief system made you not to see the light, or somebody that was coming for you to understand? Right. Maybe you killed somebody and you need to ask for forgiveness. Maybe you need to be forgiven.
Is it like escapism kind of thing that some of these souls kind of go into playing the demon or whatever character that they want to play? Is it kind of like an escapism?
If they know you're afraid, if they know you're afraid of demons, they're going to use that. Okay. So I had a couple, I don't know how many.
Tell us a case. Tell us your most interesting case of quote possession or whatever.
Quite a few. And by the way, the word possession, for example, possession does not exist. there's no displacement of the soul. And it's in this Books of the Spirits by Allan Kardec, the same thing. Mm-hmm. So they attach to your energetic or vibrational field or your aura. And through that, they interfere with your thoughts. They make you feel whatever they felt or their addictions, sometimes on purpose and sometimes with even realizing they're doing that to you. Mm-hmm. Okay. But cases, for example, cases with attachments. The very mm-hmm. first time, well, let's back up a little bit. When I trained with Aurelio, when he posted on his website that he was coming to Charlotte to facilitate sessions, a lot of people booked sessions. So in 6 days, he facilitated as he was training us 38 sessions. We were doing 6 sessions a day.
Exhausting.
Oh my God. After the first day, I was asking myself, what did I get myself into?
did you even have a bathroom break between sessions, Antonio?
Quick lunch. And then we continue. So we were starting like at 8:30 in the morning, finishing like 11:30 at night. By the second day, I was feeling better. But I learned a lot from that. Now what I facilitate is maybe the most 2 sessions. If I travel, maybe 3, but that's the most, right? So I learned from him how to do this. And once he left, the following weekend, people started contacting me already because he put on his website, and whenever he was uploading his videos, here's Antonio Sanjo, he's in Charlotte. So people started contacting me. So a week later, after he left, it was my first encounter with an attachment just by myself. Actually, 3 of them at the same time attached to a woman. And this is in my channel. If you go to my YouTube channel, you can search by Antonio Sanjo on YouTube. Session number 10, or search Antonio Sanjo 010 or 10. It is there. It's a woman named Elsa. And as I was working with her, all of a sudden she started feeling pain on her right foot. Okay, the pain that was not there before the session, she was not limping. She didn't mention any of this during the interview. That pain manifested itself. Knowing what I knew already, by training with Aurelio, I suspected that was a spirit manifesting itself, because that's what happens. Sometimes they manifest with pain, pressure, headaches, marks that appear on the body. So you go fishing. Okay, I'm going to take that pain from your foot. We're going to take it to your mind. Lend your mind and your lips to this pain so I can communicate with it. 3, 2, 1. And it's like going fishing. Okay, brother or sister, how long have you been there? How long have you been there? Been there for? For a long time or a short time? And you wait. And then they start replying, for a long time. Oh, thank you for the communication. And when you had a body, were you a man or a woman? So to make the long story short, this spirit, as he started communicating with me, he gave me his name. He asked me to call my client's aunt who was waiting outside. I need to talk to, and you'll see on the video, I need to talk to Blanca. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me call Blanca. So I opened the door, call Blanca. Blanca, can you come here for a moment, please? She came, I explained the situation to her. We have a spirit that wants to communicate with you. Okay, so the spirit started communicating with her. Are you Blanca? Yes, I am. I wanted to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And again, to make a long story short, this spirit was Blanca's husband in a past life. Blanca obviously was not conscious about this. She's in a different body. And basically, he was telling Blanca, I didn't abandon you. I was killed. I didn't abandon you and the kids, because the spirit was explaining to me that she thought that maybe in old times, right, that Blanca in a different body thought that this man, Cesar, had abandoned her and the kids because he never returned. Said, I didn't abandon you. I loved you very much. I was killed. Please forgive me. Blanca didn't know. Didn't understand what was going on. So I said, just continue, you know, as if you understood. Yeah, don't worry. It's okay. I forgive you. And once he communicated that message, he went to the light. Then there was another woman. There was a spirit of a woman that had attached to the client at a wake. When I asked this spirit, whose wake? She said, my wake. Excuse me. My wake. And I need to take some water. If you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, 1 second.
Go.
When I was asking this woman, whose weight was it? She said, my weight. So this woman, my client, when I was very young, she was taken to a wake, this woman's wake, and she attached to her, okay? When I asked her, why is it that you did it? Because she was going, she was experiencing through her mother what I experienced with mine. Basically, that was the story. And then the third spirit was a spirit of a man whose name was Raul. And Raul had molested or raped my client. I'm not saying it this way because it is there on YouTube. I'm grateful to my client that allowed to share that session. Had raped her when she was a little girl, because my client's mother, Raul's girlfriend at that time, asked him to do it. So he wanted to apologize. Okay, so those three were there. And my client didn't want to forgive the spirit. She said, no. So I said, okay, I'm going to count from 3 to 1. I want you to go back to a life. Let's see if you guys knew each other before. 3, 2, 1. He said, yes, his name is Raul. I am his wife, and I cheated on him. What kind of cheating? I left him for another man. You know, so every victim has been a victimizer before. That's as always.
Right, right. So in the case of your client who the third attachment, soul attachment was, they was a man who had attached, who had raped her in this life.
In this
they
life.
They had switched roles in a previous life.
Right, because you switch roles, right? In this, right. In one life, you're going to be the victim. You're going to be the victimizer. They're going to switch. But they follow you from life to life.
Our
soul is energy frequency. We have a signature. It's like a computer.
Uh-huh.
How is it that I can find your phone over the internet? Because of the IP address, right? Every device connected to the internet has an IP address.
Right.
The soul is the same.
Right. That's totally true. In Buddhism, everybody has a unique, we call it a unique energy signature or a unique frequency or mandala. But in the spirit world can see that, oh, this is so-and-so, whatever. But what was interesting in these cases is that, you know, typically when you're doing past life or any kind of hypnosis regression, the soul group is incarnating at the same time. But in these cases, they did not come through
not
at the
always.
Same time.
Yeah, not always. And we don't know if they're part of the same soul group. Maybe it's just a contract to learn a specific lesson. Learn
so what,
about
do like wait until that person reincarnates again and then go, oh, they're back.
Well, what happened is that Raul got lost. I mean, Raul stayed back because, in this case, Raul stayed back because of this remorse that he had done this to this woman when she was a little girl. And he wanted forgiveness, right? So in order for my client to understand about forgiveness, she went to a past life when she understood she had done something to him.
Right, so she's
forgive now, right?
Yeah.
You know, and the case of Cesar is the same sense. Cesar, the spirit of Cesar, followed my client's aunt, who's Blanca, to deliver a message. So he waited until she reincarnated. And he attached to her knees in order to give her a message. Interesting.
So he was kind of hanging around this plane.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Did they know that they're going to reincarnate again? Or did they just kind of hang around because of their own pity party and then this just happened reincarnate again?
They are in this confusion. All they know is they're looking for, because they don't understand about bodies now, right? At that moment, they don't understand about bodies. They understand about energies. They're looking for the energy of the person who was his wife, and that's how she found her.
Yeah,
now,
but that I found what I find interesting is that these people, in body, not in body, happen to continue to incarnate or hang around the same area, and then they incarnate back in the same area. I mean, it's not like she all of a sudden incarnate in Asia, then here he's hanging out in South America.
What happened is that for the soul, there's no time, there's no space, there's no geography.
That's true.
Everything is here now. You know, and that was a challenging session, and people can watch it. It's there. But I happened to see that woman a month and a half later. Actually, her aunt came back the following week and gave her testimonial, which is there as well. It's recorded on my YouTube channel. I saw this woman a month and a half later, and they had to tell me it was her because I didn't recognize her. she was different, completely different. Her life changed, you know, and it was because this, she didn't have these attached spirits interfering with her life.
Right, right. Now, yeah, see, that's amazing work. I mean, I have no words. That's amazing, amazing work. And the thing is that what I find the type of people that go into this work, oftentimes what I find when people go into this type of work in whatever hypnosis modality or any kind of modality gets them into working into like soul work is that they may come into it because of curiosity, but then they start getting these challenging cases, and that pretty much ends it for them. They're like, I just came across my first, I don't know, this one scares me, I'm done.
It is true. So, and I had a live streaming with Alba Wyman today, and we were talking exactly about that. A lot of people register for this class, not only my class, let's say QHHT, and they register because of the books, because of what they hear about Dolores Cannon, and they're curious, and maybe they have the intention to do it, but they realize in the way that there's a commitment, there's a lot of work, there's a lot of practice, there's a learning curve, it takes time, and a lot of us, and that's when I started, I was still working a full-time job, right, and I was doing my sessions after hours, my classes on the weekends, on vacation weeks. So they start finding all these difficult cases where they either get scared, they get discouraged, or this is not for me, this is too much work. Some people are focusing so only on the money, which I don't recommend. If you're going to do this type of hypnosis, don't focus on the money because it's not going to work. So they're worrying about making the money, they're worrying about getting the income, so it's not worth it, the amount of effort I'm putting here, I'm just having just a couple of sessions a month. So a lot of people quit in the way. This is not for everybody. And I was told that by spirits. I was told not everybody's born to do this.
What did the spirits say about this, the this type of work and the, you know, the people that do it? What is it? Is there like a blueprint for this type of work?
So
it's not for the faint of heart, I'll tell you that.
No, you really need to be committed to this. You need to feel like you want to be at service of other souls, right? Incarnated souls and disincarnated souls. So this is why when I started teaching the technique, I set the intention to the universe. I want to attract these kind of people that come to learn this class, because I consider introspective hypnosis a sacred technique, because we're helping a soul overcome issues. We're helping a soul learn about forgiveness. We're helping a soul understand that staying in the victim role is not going to do anything for them, to embrace whatever experiencing they're facing, because their soul planned all these lessons before incarnating. What is it that your soul thought they needed to learn for whatever you're experiencing? Right. You know, so it's, and so far so good. I mean, we have a Facebook group and we have a mentoring group, and the energy among the people that took the class is the same. Right. And I'm really grateful to the universe for that.
Right. And it's global too, because of the power of the internet. You can learn online as well as in person, and you can also facilitate wonderful sessions online as well as in person as well. So not being in person is no longer a setback for this type of work. And the thing that I find interesting as well is, you know, when people get over the fear of hell and demons, okay, and they've come to terms like, okay, I get where it originated from, but they're still scared of actually, like, it's almost like some people are really scared of looking in the mirror because they don't want to see what's underneath. They don't want to deal with their internal childhood traumas or their struggles with things. What do you say to clients who are challenged with that?
Well, thank you for the question, and let's think about what COVID is doing for us.
Okay.
Besides being a virus that is killing people and is putting everybody home, we're spending more time with the family. If you're quarantined, you're not able to leave your house. You're staying with your wife, with your husband, your partner. for a lot of hours without being able to go anywhere. You're not able to go to the gym. You sometimes you might not even have to go to the office. So the same way an addict uses whatever addiction as a distractor of the mind, not to deal with the repressed emotion, some of us use the daily routine to keep ourselves occupied, to keep ourselves busy in order not to deal with what we have to deal. But once you're forced to stay home, if you don't like to be alone, you need to face that. If you have issues with your partner, they're gonna go to, these issues will surface, right? And this is, I thought I was gonna be dead without that many sessions during this time. It's the opposite.
Oh my God. I'm
getting a lot of
sessions. It's crazy. Yeah, I'm so busy this year. 2020 has been the craziest busy year for me. It's nonstop.
Right. It's nonstop. So I tell people, if you have a trauma or you have this issue, part of you is trapped in that experience. if you had this issue when you were 5 years old, part of you is still 5 years old and is trapped in this experience.
In that space. Yeah.
But it's happening now. It's 5 years, it's the past, if you think of linear time, but in quantum time it's happening now. There's a part of you that is 5 years old that is reliving this experience over and over and over. And this is why whenever you face a similar situation, you're triggered. So you can close your eyes, you can pretend this is not happening. You can postpone this, but it will still be there. Wouldn't you like to go? Mm-hmm. Yes. Wouldn't you like to go and free this part of you that might be scared, that doesn't understand what is happening, that is still 5 years old, that doesn't have this knowledge that you have now? Wouldn't you like to do that? So I would talk to them that way, you see, to go and rescue that child. And it's actually allowing them to go to that memory, help them relive that memory, being aware, allowing them to be aware of what not took place, because everything is happening now. What is taking place at the physical, mental, and emotional level?
Right.
What is it that the body is feeling? So they need to experience this in order to release it. If there's something that needs someone that you need to be for, that you need to forgive, we're gonna show our clients how to forgive. Because when you don't forgive, number one, you become a victim. When you become a victim, you're giving your energy to someone else.
True.
And you're keeping energy here that is going to turn into a physical symptom later.
That is so true. It happens. I see this over and over again. And you know what? I wanted to, for some people who are like, who may be thinking in linear concepts. Okay. I explain this in other interviews, and I explain it over and over and over again, because people still really stuck in the third dimension of thinking of linear. Okay. So, but in Buddhism, healing, the energy of healing is the energy of consciousness, the energy of the universal consciousness, that oversoul that resides in everything. That's the entry point for healing. So healing in that unity consciousness, everything is unified, all things exist at the same time. That is a fifth dimensional awareness where you see everything exactly happening at the same time. So in any kind of healing modality in Buddhism, and we don't put, you know, boxes on any other forms that come out as well. We just all call it basically healing, energy healing. That happens in the space where you connect to consciousness at the same time. So what these different practitioners are doing, just for people who are not familiar with the concept of quantum time and energy healing, is that all they're doing is facilitating the space for the client to get into that fifth dimensional awareness of everything existing now and connecting to source to facilitate their own healing. And because we are all energy, these are just the avatars that we are. And all the different modalities will continue to find this over and over again, because these avatars change lifetime to lifetime, whether it's in Earth or another dimension or another universe or whatever the experience that you might decide to incarnate into. These will change, but your energy is the same. And your aura field is the same. And so all the different traumas and all the different things that we put ourselves through, they stick in our aura field, and they were
We carry them from body to body.
Right, and they found this in acupuncture research too. When they do acupuncture, is that we carry it in our chakra points, we carry it in our meridian, our human energy field. But if you're trying to address dense issues that are lowering your frequency, and you see yourself as a energy being, which is what fifth dimensional awareness is, then in order to raise your frequency, you have to address those issues in your chakra fields that's lowering your frequency, that's keeping you pinned down. And that means addressing that five-year-old little girl that is upset about something, or addressing this thing that's upset about that, or addressing this thing that's hung up. So I just want to explain that to people when they're like, "What? How is all this healing happening on these soul energetic levels?" That's what is happening. So let me get to this. Now we're going to go into the conversation about healing. So in Buddhism, we believe that all meditation practices are a form of hypnosis, because it accesses the same gamma brain waves that tap into a fifth dimensional awareness of energy healing. And they've done EEG studies of meditation and energy healing, and it turns on the same centers. It turns on the gamma brainwave frequency, which is a higher dimensional awareness where everything's more lucid. And healing happens much faster in those higher states. And so they've already found this in science, that we are tapping into those high gamma brainwave frequencies. And in that part is where we connect to source. And modern science has also continued to find this again and again in their research into meditation and energy healing. So they're about the same thing. They're doing the same thing to the body. But the funny thing I find is that a lot of meditation practices, they follow this. And tell me, Antonio, if this I sound familiar, because you've had a lot of different hypnosis training. And I have had a lot of meditation training in different schools of Buddhism growing up and still. So most meditation practices in all the different schools follow this. You either get some kind of script for getting into the brainwave of calm and peace and connection, okay? Just kind of get you kind of into that place. So there's some kind of induction script, if you can call it. And then there's some kind of visualization technique. And then the person, to get the person into that space, once they're into that higher space in their frequency. And then the person can either explore, or if they're trying to do something and kind of uncover something, there'll be somebody else, like other monks will sit around in a circle, monks and nuns, and they'll ask the person questions, and they'll document what they see in that lucid controlled dreaming that's going on. They're like, what are you seeing? What's the path? You know, they're trying to get instruction. That's how they found where Yeshua was going to be born in the Middle East, and other things that they look for. So anyway, so they will ask questions, and then maybe even, and if you snap out of meditation on your own, that's fine, you'll be fine. But maybe even if somebody's really, really into that control lucid dreaming meditation, they may even bring them out in a like coming out script. Your chakras are, you know, coming back down, and you're slowly feeling your body, and your body's coming back. So they'll have the coming out script. So, so it's because of the various ways to connect to source for guidance that we accept all forms of meditation, and we allow for all expressions without trying to compete with various schools of Buddhism. So I bring that around because not everybody's familiar with all the different meditation techniques in Buddhism, but it really runs a very similar flow to hypnosis.
Yes, because you enter in an altered state of consciousness or expanded state of awareness, if you want to call it that way.
Yeah. Now you started off, like you said, you started off as a Life Between Lives hypnotherapist with the Newton Institute.
I started with QHST, Quantum QHST, Hypnosis Technique, Dolores Cannon.
Right.
Then Aurelio Mejia, Introspective Hypnosis. Then LBL and TVP.
Now, have you done BQH with Candace?
No, I have not. I heard really good things about it.
Okay.
But it's again,
They follow the same kind of pattern.
Follow the kind of same, yes, with no restrictions, which is good.
Right, right. So you kind of run a lot of different forms and tools that you have, but you teach introspective hypnosis. What compelled you to focus on introspective hypnosis compared to all the other ones that you had the option to teach? Why introspective?
Because my focus was on symptoms. Okay, because you don't go to a practitioner saying, "I have a headache," or "I have sadness. I need to explore my past lives." Right? The truth is that you have sadness, and this kind of sadness that doesn't have an explanation. I don't know why I'm sad. I'm totally okay. I feel sad, or I have this neck pain. My doctor says everything is okay. They don't tell you, so I need to experience a past life. I like introspective hypnosis because we start focusing on the now. What is affecting you now? What are the symptoms? And this is the same approach of TVP, Kabbalistic Technique, Past Life Therapy. We focus on the now, and we work around and ask questions around the symptoms, which is the thread that is going to take you to the root cause of the issue. And it could be anywhere. It could be past life, could be the time in the womb, can be during childhood, while you were being born, or even after you died in a past life, right? There are different ways in which this can affect you. But I liked it very much because, again, it focuses on the now. I was able to have flexibility on, even though introspective hypnosis has a structure, it is not a formula. You might know the structure, your client doesn't. So you need to adapt to the session. And that's what I liked about it. What else is it that I liked about introspective hypnosis? Different inductions. Even though I learned two or three from Aurelio, and I learned one from Dolores Cannon, I noticed that, as I was learning, that not everybody goes in a trance in the same way. You have some people that are visual, some people are not visual. If you use a visual induction, somebody that is not visual is not going to do anything. It's going to frustrate them. So I'm able to apply different inductions. Or if I want to, I can use no inductions at all. Because as you said, as long as you close your eyes and you put yourself in this state of meditation and you start asking questions, little by little, your client starts disengaging, disconnecting, going into this expanded state of awareness.
That's true. Are you familiar with Marissa Pierce? She's a hypnotherapist and counselor.
No.
She doesn't use a script, and she teaches her form of hypnosis as well.
I'm against scripts.
Yeah. What's that?
I am against scripts. I don't use scripts. Yeah. I explained to you why, but yeah, I am totally against scripts.
Why not use scripts? I mean, script or no script, you're gonna get results. But for some people, they like scripts. Some people don't like scripts. Some people just kind of go into.
Well, very simple, right? So, for example, I'm going to get my notebook here, right? So, you're my client. I'm going to put you into a trance, and I'm doing this. I'm breathing, right? I'm breathing. Hold on, let me just blank page. I'm doing this and I am breathing. Number one, I am going to sound robotic. Maybe I know the script by heart, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm going to sound robotic. Your client is gonna notice that you're breathing. And your client might be thinking, because I had clients saying that came from all the modalities, all the practitioners they visited. I paid this much money for a session. Could you believe this guy was reading to me? Said, no. They were trained that way, to do it that way, right? Mm-hmm. So you're doing this. Number one, you sound robotic. Number two, your clients can get offended. Number three, and the most important one, I am doing this. I am reading this way. I'm not paying attention to what is happening to you as I am saying my induction. As I am doing an induction, I need to monitor your body to see what you're going through. You might have tears already, and you might start getting marks or involuntary movements. I need to understand what is happening to you. But if I'm paying attention to my script and not to you, that is a big mistake. That's three already. Number four, an induction has a life on its own, the way I see it. The way I see it, it has a life on its own. So I can use whatever you do as a deepener, as I am putting you in a trance. Let's say I'm saying the induction to you, and as I'm saying the induction to you, you start doing this with your eyes.
Right.
Blinking, 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 right? People do that. For some reason, the body reacts that way. And I can say, yeah, that's very good, because the more you blink, the more you relax. And the more you relax, the deeper you go. I am using whatever is happening. So as I'm, another example, I'm saying induction, and there is a firefighter truck going by. Wow, wow, wow. And, right. And as you hear that fire truck going away, your conscious mind goes with it, and you relax even more. So I'm using whatever is happening, right, to help you go deeper into a trance. But if I'm just doing this, I cannot deviate from this. I'm not paying attention to what you're saying. You might be already in the experience. People go into a past life in the middle of an induction. Are you going to finish your script in order to address what your client is experiencing? No, you stop and they jump in and start working with your client. Yeah. So you need the flexibility. I the people that take introspective hypnosis class, I say to them, you will need to read this a few times to get familiar. You don't need to memorize it completely. Memorize the steps and make it your own and put your own words. I never say the same words twice.
Right, right.
I know the steps.
Right. Now you do have an online course actually coming up pretty soon.
Yes.
And you have many more that you teach. I think you also teach it with Alba Wyman.
I teach with Alba Wyman. We were normally, Alba Wyman was helping me and teaching with me the live classes. That's what we were doing. The in-person
before
classes.
COVID.
Right. We started in the US. We went to the Netherlands. We went to New Zealand. We had a schedule. Australia didn't happen, for example. So everything changed with COVID.
Right.
So now Alba and I are doing things online from time to time, but mostly it's me online. So I have a class scheduled on the 16th of this month.
Yeah.
But if people go to my website, I listed everything for the year, more or less. There is a class coming in the Netherlands in October. That's almost, I only have 2 spots available on that one.
Is that in-person class in the Netherlands?
In-person class in the Netherlands, yes.
Okay.
So
I really hope that happens for you, because that means I could go on my cruise.
Okay. Well, this class was supposed to take place last year. We moved it for this year because of COVID. I gave the ones that registered the chance to do it online. They said, no, we want to do the in-person class. We want the experience. The Samaya, which is a monastery that was turned into a convention center, is beautiful.
Ooh, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah. So I said, okay, so if you want to wait that, let me give you a 4-day online class at no cost. And then we go next year to the Netherlands and we'll do the in-person class.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, it's taking place in October. And it's another one that is going to take place in December in the Netherlands as well. It's not listed yet, but it's coming.
It's coming, guys. This work is wonderful work. It's not for the faint of hearts, but it is wonderful work. And, you know, if you are interested in it, go to the site. What can people expect to learn from, you know, because most people who get into this space, like I know more than a couple modalities, and I just basically facilitate whatever modality the client is in for. So like if the client just wants Buddhism, I'll give just Buddhism.
Okay.
Most of my clients are Asians, and most of them want that anyways, but they want some kind of perspective, quantum perspective from my tradition. But if they come for another thing, I'll facilitate that, etc. So, but a lot of the people who are attracted to this have different tools that they use. So what can they expect to learn with you in this class, online or in person?
I start with the basics. I start with the story of hypnosis, a little bit to understand the tools we're going to use. I explain the structure of introspective hypnosis, the 6 steps as I envisioned it, because when I learned from Aurelio, he was not teaching classes. I was shadowing.
So you actually formalized it.
He started teaching after I was already, I asked him permission to teach the technique, say, oh, call it whatever you want and make it yours. It's your technique anyway. So, how do I explain this? I need to do it the American way. a manual and a structure, step by step, PowerPoint presentation, right?
So, you would be what we call in Buddhism, you would be the student scribe.
Oh, okay.
Now you teach and you master and you become the teacher. Yeah. I'm on vacation.
So I teach about the interview, how to do a proper interview. To have a successful session, you need a successful interview. All the things that happen in the interview, not only asking questions about their lives, there are many, many things that take place during the interview, building rapport, inputting suggestions, catching those phrases that your clients will say that might come from an alternate experience without they even realize, detect patterns in their lives. So many, many things. Mm-hmm. And then we teach the do's and don'ts, the mistakes I made. And with Alba is with me, the mistakes we made, because we don't want people to make the same mistake. If you make mistakes, make new ones, save time. Mm-hmm. So that is the added value, the do's and don'ts. Don't do this. This didn't work. I show you about the technology. You're going to use this type of camera. This is how you do it on Zoom. This is the type of induction that is mostly used on Zoom.
Right.
Help them how is it that they need to build their website? Because a lot of people just put any kind of picture, any kind of content, free websites, and doesn't look professional.
Right, right. And I want to mention that as well, because there is an aspect of business and marketing in this, and you don't have to know it all. You don't have to know. There's plenty of resources and affordable resources and people out there who are great at making beautiful websites, great at making, et cetera, et cetera. But you have to look at from the perspective of a customer. Like, would you want to book a session with this person?
Right.
So that is really, really important. I also want to mention, something came up, and I wanted to mention something very clearly that we talked about earlier about those psychics that were telling people, oh, you have an attachment, and then letting them go. If you come across anybody, like, what is it, a psychic or a medium or whatever, that tells you you have a negative attachment, you have a cloud over you, if they don't immediately go, let me help you with that, then you disregard what they say.
Yeah.
Because they're not there to help you.
Because if they really see it, they should be able to communicate with it.
Right.
And explain to that lost soul what is happening, right?
Exactly. So just want to preface that for people, because those types of people, they may not fully understand the damage that they unconsciously just willy-nilly put it out there, but you can at least be aware. And they really give a bad name to people who are really doing some wonderful, wonderful work that is transforming. You transform one person's life and you transform their whole network.
Yeah. And it's not that I don't believe in psychics. I have friends that are psychics. Mm-hmm. And I totally believe in psychics, but there are some people that, because everybody's intuitive now. Everybody's a psychic now. Everybody's a channeler now. Everybody's an expert, you know, and then they market themselves social media. You need to be careful, you know, read the reviews, ask questions, feel the energy of that person. If you feel ego, if you detect ego from these people that are supposed to be helping your soul, stay away from that. There should not be ego in what we do.
Yeah.
But it's very responsible to say to somebody, oh, you have an attachment, go find somebody to help you. You're the psychic. If you saw it, what is it that you can not address it?
Yeah, you can talk. Why don't you talk to it for me?
Yeah, aren't you a psychic?
Talk to it for me. Figure it out. You know, don't just, you know, fix it. You don't just say, hey, you have a wound, a cut right there. Go get a Band-Aid, put it on. Yes. That's being responsible.
Another big one is a curse. Oh, there's a curse in my family.
I have seen that, especially on superstitious cultures. And then they ring him in to come in for, you know.
You need a cleanse, and you have a curse, and XYZ generations back, going back, and we need, come on, you know. As you said, we create our own reality. A lot of, even spirits, even when we're out of the body, we're affected by our belief system. And if you read, I've been reading books from Chico Xavier, a renowned medium in Brazil, passed away years ago. He channeled over 400 books. He never signed any of those with his name. He signed a book with the name of the spirit that dictated the book. One of those spirits was André Luiz, and he dictated 12 books to him. In his books, André Luiz explains about the spirit world. It gives a lot of information, and it explains how some souls don't realize that they have died or their body died. They think they're having a nightmare.
Mm. So, how do you spell his name for those clients out there who want to look up his books?
Chico Xavier. Chico is C-H-I-C-O. And then last name is Xavier, is X-A-V-I-E-R.
Okay, Chico Xavier.
Right.
Or and, Xavier, if you guys want to look that up.
And the book, actually, one of them, there's a movie made based on the first book dictated by the spirit of André Luiz. It is called Nosso Lar, which means our home in Portuguese. But you can find it on Amazon Prime, I think. It's called Astral City. It's a beautiful movie based on that book, and it explains the process of the soul as it leaves the body. And actually, it's his process as he was leaving the body. Very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. You know, I have so many questions, but I have two last remaining questions for you. What tips can people do today to address any kind of dense issues that are holding down their vibration? If they are not able to get a hypnosis session from you or anybody else, what can they start doing today to kind of help address those things?
Well, what is it that you're focusing on, right? Whatever puts you in a low vibration state, what are you focusing on? You focus on negative things. If you're having problems at home, arguments, that makes your vibration go down. And when your vibration is down, you're lowering your shield. That is your protection against souls that might sometimes take advantage and attach to you. Avoid using anything that would put you in an altered state of consciousness without any control. Some people call it the sacred plants, the mushrooms, or people even that do ayahuasca, because you leave the body and you have no control. You need to wait until it wears out in order for the experience to end. In hypnosis, you are in control and you can finish it whenever you want. So if you feel down, focus on positive things. Visualize yourself surrounded by white light and do positive thinking. Exercise is going to bring your energy up, and it's your belief system. If you believe that you're okay, if you believe that your soul is powerful and you're in control, nothing is going to happen to you.
Right,
people
right,
say, Antonio, don't you get attachments? It's not part of my belief system. Would these spirits attach to you or attack you? That doesn't happen. Besides, they know I'm there to help you, not to take them away. They know I'm going to help. So it's what you believe, it's your intention. Set your intention. Where is it that you want to be? How is it that you want to feel?
Right, right. No, I completely get that. And you know, the thing that I found also is that, you know, people sometimes don't want to take responsibility for the choices in their life and the things that they have created in their life and how they create it. And so it's easy to quote, attached to the concept that the devil made me do it, or a negative entity attached, and all of a sudden, you know, whatever these concepts are. And it's a process. Now, I know through my practice, I know you know through your practice, and there are a lot of cultures out there that have the tradition or the belief that, like I said earlier, there is no hell, there is no Satan. And some people will challenge that because they want so bad to be a place of punishment for bad, bad people. And that the concept,
or they want
that,
to blame somebody for what is happening
right.
to them.
And the concept of all there is the light. And even the most horrible, bad person is healed and is counseled and is going through the life review and is worked on, because no soul is going to be garbaged. Okay. Right. So, and some people are really challenged with such a loving system or concept of a system that even somebody like Hitler would go to heaven. They really, really do not want to accept that. What do you say to people who challenge you on these things that you're saying that you're finding through your practice and that's revolutionizing people's lives.
That this is a school named called Planet Earth, and that we come here to learn. We're students. And we come to this planet to experience something that we cannot experience in spirit form: emotions, fear, sadness, phobias, all that stuff. We come here. We can learn in suffering. I mean, we can learn in love, which is beautiful. But we can also learn in suffering. If I tell my clients, if you remember the most difficult moments of your life, when you had saddest moments, isn't that when you learn the most? So suffering is an amplifier for learning. Now, people that do not want to take responsibility of what is happening to them, because they want to blame the boss, they want to blame the, because of my parents, I'm this way, because of my husband, because of my wife, they don't want to take responsibility. You are taking the victim role. And if you don't take responsibility of that, the universe will take, will present the same lesson disguised as something else, and you're going to repeat a pattern in your life. See, it's gonna come over and over and over. So, yeah, and forgiveness. You talked about Hitler, right? Hitler can go to heaven. People say, you're crazy. How can you say that? Everything is about learning. What happened after the Holocaust? Didn't this create an awareness in the whole world saying, this is wrong, this is not supposed to happen, we are all the same, we cannot discriminate somebody for the religion?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I've had those clients who went through lives where they were in the Holocaust, and then they went through other lives.
I had one too, yeah.
Yeah, where they, and they know why they chose to die in the Holocaust. Or they know why they were the perpetrator of, the bad deeds. And so when you see it on a more holistic view, that it almost sounds callous to be like, well, now you're giving a free pass to anybody to do anything that they want. No, there is no free pass. They're going to learn their lesson. And we know through hypnosis that when you do negative deeds to people, oh, you'll get it back in your life review, and you'll get it back the next time you reincarnate
in some way, shape, or form. That's karma, but karma is not punishment. Nobody's punishing you. It's the law of balance. Okay, you did this. You make somebody feel this. Okay, it's to turn you feel it now. Actually, I have a case about that in my book, and I have the case of the little boy that was in a gas chamber. Yeah. That died in a gas chamber in the Holocaust. I have those two cases in my book. Everything is learning. It's difficult. Yeah. Sometimes I question myself, why is it that we have to suffer so much in the name of spiritual evolution? But I am who I am because of what I experienced as I was growing up. I am who I am because of what I went through with my father. And it's not that my father was a bad person. He was my best friend. He was my father. But when I was 23 years old, he left. I was already married, but he left home and he started his own life, and I got disconnected from him. Right. That took me on a journey, you know? So yeah, at that moment I was feeling like a victim. At that moment I was saying he's a bad person, but now he's gone. And I say to him, thank you, because of the role that you decided to play in my life. This is who I am now, and this is what I am doing. You see? Right. So,
life lessons, learning lessons, they're not always easy, and they're not always easy to digest. And that's the struggle that a lot of people really, really have issue with, the concept of reincarnation. And when they go through and they see how their lives are developed and pre-planned and all that kind of stuff, and how they set. Like I've had sessions where I have the father who molested, beat, and almost killed their kid end up going to the other side, getting healed, getting counseling, and going through that whole process in the spirit world, and then deciding to be the guardian angel for that same person as a way to pay back and try to make amends by being their guardian angel, by watching them, by protecting that person from getting into a car accident or from getting hurt in that incident in the alley, all these weird kind of synchronicities that this client had faced. Like, I think I have a guardian angel. That was her father that she really, really hated. He was trying to. And it's interesting how they make these agreements in the spirit world. And maybe at some point when she passes on, they may reincarnate at the same time and be part of the same group where they fix things or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know necessarily how that all works. It is a case-by-case basis, but these are the common challenges to these questions. Like, why do bad things have to happen?
Yeah, everything happens for a reason and everything is about learning. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend people that see what is the emotion that you always feel? What is it that happens to you constantly? That is exactly what you need to learn. That pattern is the one that you need to learn. You can complain, you can cry, you can close your eyes and pretend that it doesn't exist, that it's gonna go away. It's not gonna go away. You're either learning on this one or you will carry this same lesson to the next one. I had clients when they went to this sad event, and as I was asking questions, I asked this question, right, in a trance. How many lifetimes have you spent trying to learn forgiveness? 7. Can you imagine 7 lifetimes to learn one lesson? So let's take action. Embrace whatever the universe throws at you. The answer is not to run away from it. It's to embrace it, experience it. If it's painful, experience pain. If it's sadness, experience that sadness, because your spirit is going to learn from it. Once you learn, that pattern is going to disappear. Get ready, because there's a new lesson coming. This is a school. Stay out of the comfort zone. You either do it yourself or the universe will take care of it for you.
Yeah, well, you'll learn your lesson. You came here for a lesson. You're definitely learning your lesson. And when you learn to create your world much more responsibly, much better. I mean, at some point we have to ask ourselves, are you done with the suffering? Are you ready for the good stuff?
Yeah.
You know, and in order to learn how to create the good stuff, you have to at least have some basics. So these life lessons are kind of helping you get the basics. You know, Antonio, I can go on and on, but I love this stuff. But thank you so much for for contributing to the expanding hypnosis profession. Your book is really, really needed at this time to help people worldwide address their phobias and superstitions about negativity and how it manifests in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so for more information about Antonio Sangio's offerings, go ahead and go to his website. It's Antonio, A-N-T-O-N-I-O, Sangio, Sangio.com. The next course is coming up in about a week or two. And then there's many, many more that's coming down the line. And so we're really looking for some very, very brave spiritual warriors and brave healers to take on this type of really, really powerful work. And there's a whole, I know in a lot of the hypnosis community, there's a whole network. We really work together and try to bring each other up and help each other out. So, It's one collective, really. So with that, thank you to our listeners for listening to another enlightening conversation. And until next time, blessings.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, Vaughn. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Merkaba Chakras, where we talk Buddhism in the fifth dimension. For more information about today's guest, please go to the show description. For more information about Vaughn's metaphysical work, please go to MerkabaChakras.com. The views expressed today are for entertainment purposes and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host or replace any medical or legal advice. Don't forget to subscribe for more interviews about the fifth dimension. Until we meet again, blessings.